TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I knew I was going to run into you here today because it was a prophecy that told me it was going to happen.
Well, Chris, I'm glad that you listened because, you know, I have been waiting here for the last 5 hours. So, you know, I mean, you were bound to run into me because I've just been sitting here waiting because I've, you know, read that prophecy and, well, I felt compelled to be here.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I've been in ops with Worf and Dax and Kira debating whether or not the prophecy was true and whether I should come here. Finally, Worf convinced me that I should. He had faith I was supposed to be here.
Well, I am glad he did.
Absolutely. So yeah, the theme of today's episode of The Orb is prophecy. And specifically, we're going to talk about the emissaries' prophecies as seen in Rapture, but also a bit about Bajoran prophecy in general. And Matthew, it feels like there are a lot of prophecies. And in The Reckoning, Bashir says, if you look hard enough, you'll find a Bajoran prophecy for just about anything. The ancient texts are a tangle of vague contradictions. But in reality, only 8 prophecies were mentioned on screen. But in the novels that followed Season 7, Avatar, there is a bit about the fact that the Vedic Assembly and the Chamber of Ministers had approved or sanctioned, accepted thousands of prophecies, but yet there are thousands of others that they said are not authentic. So prophecies play a huge role in Bajoran life. And let's just start off the discussion because it's one of the things that I've always enjoyed over the years of us talking about Deep Space Nine together on the show is that we approach Star Trek from different angles because I think, as most listeners know, I'm not a spiritual person and I'm atheist, but you are a very spiritual person. But at the same time, as I say that, I kind of do believe in faith and things kind of working out as they should. I don't know how to put it into words. It's like something I feel. But why don't you start us off in talking about how prophecy and faith plays a role in DS9? Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like then, you know, your theme song would be that you have faith and faith of the heart. So, yeah.
I guess I do.
Just going where your heart will take you. But anyway, that's a whole other show, Chris.
That's our other podcast.
Yeah, that's the other
Matthew.
One. But no, I think, you know, the beauty of this episode, I think, is the way that you have it summed up. The entire conversation is summed up in the conversation that happens in Ops with Kira and Dax and O'Brien and Worf. And you have two people there who understand the idea of having faith in something more than themselves and what they can see, taste, touch, or hear. And then you have two other people who don't. For them, they have rejected that, even though, I mean, you've seen Dax and O'Brien have both seen crazy, miraculous things happen, and yet they still kind of deny in many ways that the supernatural is possible and that you can have faith in it. And I think part of that is that both Worf and Kira have this faith that there is something not only bigger than themselves, but something that bigger than themselves that actually cares about them as well. And is a part of their life unfolding as it should. And I think what makes it interesting is that you have these characters to which I think there's a humility. Like, you wouldn't really say, you wouldn't think of Worf of being a humble person, but Faith, I think there is a sense that it takes a humility to be able to say that I, one, don't know everything, and two, that I can believe that there's something bigger than myself, and three, that I would then put myself under the leadership of that thing. So I think that's another really, I mean, there's all these interesting aspects of what happens here, I think, on Deep Space Nine with these characters and the ways in which they impact each other. And even without us talking about like faith and like something like spiritual, I think there's a beautiful thing that we also see play out in this episode is that Kira has had her faith in Sisko validated in the sense that he has proven himself to be somebody worth trusting and having faith in as well. And that's why she also trusts him. And so it's such a fascinating question. And I think this is maybe one of the most complicated episodes around this idea, because you also see people struggling with what does it mean to also have enough faith, but then also choose something like a medical intervention, you know? So, I mean, like, there's so many different questions happening in this episode about the idea of faith.
Right. Well, you mentioned Kira and her faith in Sisko as the emissary. That's been building. If you think back to the beginning of the series and her reaction to him arriving, that relationship has grown so much. I think when you get to Rapture and when Sisko himself is finally accepting that he is the emissary, that really reinforces for Kira, validates her trust and her faith in him. This conversation we're talking about in Ops, I wanted to just actually read the exchange because I think it's important to know exactly what they said. And it starts out with them talking about that the captain is going to die. And then Kira says the captain is not going to die. He is the emissary. The prophets will take care of him. And O'Brien says, with all due respect, Major, I'd rather see Julian take care of him. And then Kira says, Chief, I know you're worried, but the prophets are leading the emissary on this path for a reason. And then, so that exchange is what I would expect between these two characters. But then kind of an unexpected thing happens, and Worf steps up and says, do not attempt to convince them, Major. They cannot understand. Now, I wasn't expecting Worf to take that position, because Worf has said before, you know, the Klingons don't have any guides. They killed their guides, right? But Dax asks him, since when did you believe in the prophets? And what I liked in that moment of the episode is that Michael Dorn pauses, and there's this moment before Worf responds, and you think he's going to say, I don't believe in the prophets, but da-da-da-da-da. But instead, he like very thoughtfully says, what I believe in is faith. Without it, there can be no victory. If the captain's faith is strong, he will prevail. And so he does tie that back in, I think, to a Klingon mentality, you know, bringing in the victory element. Dax says that's not much to bet his life on. And then Kira says, you're wrong. It's everything. Mm-hmm. So several things I love about this whole scene. Also, the faith part, the way Michael Dorn delivers that line, the way Worf says, what I believe in is faith, reminds me of Contact and the whole thing between Ellie and Palmer Joss and whether or not she really went on the journey or not. And it there that juxtaposition again of someone of faith and someone of science. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing we get here with Dax and Kira at the end of this. And then Worf is an unexpected element. what I love about this NDS9 is that we can have these key characters of the show who are holding very different beliefs, and they can actually just stand here and have this discussion together. And I think challenge each other in what they are thinking. And it's also Star Trek challenging us as the viewer to consider all these other positions instead of telling us science matters, just science, or faith matters, just faith.
Yeah, I mean, and the beauty of this will be is that Kira doesn't negate the fact that science exists and that God, like the prophets can use that too. God, you know, if you want to say that, can use that as well. And maybe we should just trust to that when Kai Winn is talking about, well, we should just trust the prophets. Well, you know, if you believe the prophets are these omnipotent beings who help, you know, give people what they need to survive and to live their lives and to thrive, then, well, medicine is a part of that, right? And that if the prophets are really what you believe, that they are big enough to then work through all types of means, not just the supernatural, right? They can also work through the natural. It's all, it could be all part of the plan. And so I think that what's really beautiful is the nuance that Kira gives to this episode. But I think I really like what Worf says, because it's so true, because Worf is pointing out that everybody has faith in something. Like, nobody is an atheist in the sense of that they don't believe in anything. We all put our faith in something, right? We are either putting our faith in ourselves, we're putting our faith in medicine, we're putting our faith, like, everyone has faith. It's just, what is your faith in? And so I think there's the really beautiful, that's basically what Worf is saying. And yet, I do think is so interesting is that in many ways, I would say that a lot of the Starfleet characters that we see are so stunted to the idea that they have faith in anything, they've actually kind of lost sight of the truth. And Worf, I think, is much closer to what the truth of the reality is that you still have faith in something. That's where his very Klingon nature then comes in, where he says that without faith, there can be no victory, because to go into any situation, you have to have faith that you can overcome it, right? You have to have a belief in that you can overcome it, and that you have to have faith in the soldiers beside you. And like, again, we have faith in a million different things. I have faith the chair I'm sitting in is going to actually hold up my weight. That's why I put my butt in it, right? You know, so, but it's a silly example, but it's 100% true. So I think, again, this is what I've always loved about Deep Space Nine as somebody of faith, is that it took seriously the reality of people with faith, and it did not make fun of them, and it legitimized our belief systems in the sense of and showing how valid it is to life, right? And that maybe life is just more complicated than we ever thought it was. And I think that's kind of, you know, this, like you said, this episode, we really do see the way in which, like, Sisko's been on a huge journey throughout this series, in the sense that in this episode, he's reveling in a little bit, being the emissary. Like, it's gotten him a special gift of being able to see this picture of this lost city that nobody else has been able to see, right? He gets to see it first because, well, he's the emissary. And then being able to have these visions and all of, like, he's accepting this in the way he would have never thought that he would accept this at the beginning, when this was a real uncomfort for him, you know? No. He finds it a completely comfortable thing now. And it's difficult for him, right? But he's also found it rewarding and worth it. So it's just, man, there's such depth, you know, even just to one episode. But this whole episode has been built from episode one of the series, right?
Yeah. So I was thinking of a point I wanted to discuss as you were talking there, but before that, another one just came up, and I want to connect to Sisko's journey before we get too far away from it. Talking about what happened in Ops and that discussion and the fact that you have a diverse group of people, different backgrounds, different beliefs, exposed to each other and bit by bit influencing how they see the world. Sisko's journey very much reflects the fact that he came to the station with one mindset, but being exposed to many things, being exposed, first of all, to the Bajoran people, the Bajoran religion, the belief they have that he is the emissary, events that bit by bit reinforce the idea that he's the emissary, either directly or through the fact that prophecies made appear to be coming true. And then just being on the station with such a diverse group of people who come and go from there, and dealing with people like Quark, for example, over the course of 5 years now, has really changed who he is and how he sees things, and I think made him open up to the possibility that he really is the emissary. And then that ties into the first point I was thinking about, which is that you mentioned how Starfleet officers, as we see them, seem to be stunted from the idea of faith or spirituality. And I think part of that is the training that they get from Starfleet Academy, of course. If you think about people in a situation on a starship, how do they face something? You would train them to be more analytical, not to rely on faith, I think. But beyond that obvious point, it speaks to the idea, the vision that Gene Roddenberry had of humanity's future, where apparently on Earth, the existence, very existence of religion had been eradicated from society. That's how Star Trek seemed to portray religion for much of its existence as a franchise. I think it moved away from that. Of course, it moved away from that with Deep Space Nine. And I think since Deep Space Nine, it has continued to be more open to the idea of faith, spirituality, of religion, and such continuing to exist in the 24th century and beyond.
See, but I don't know. I might disagree with that a little bit, because I do feel like the original series seemed to be more of the mind that, I mean, spirituality hadn't been eradicated. They literally had a chapel in the Enterprise, you know, and they mean, in many ways, Kirk, I feel like he has more of the attitude of Captain America in the Avengers, where he's like, there's only one God, ma'am, and he doesn't dress like that. And that's kind of his attitude, because he's never saying there isn't a God. He's just pointing out everybody's false gods, right? And that's a difference than saying that there isn't any kind of higher power and there isn't any kind of spirituality in the original series. And I mean, you even think of the motion picture, which is the whole idea of transcending and the search for God, basically. I mean, that's what that movie is about. V'ger searching for its God. And in the same search, of the same way that we as humanity have that search, like, is there a God? What's out there? You know, all of these massive questions that drive all of our philosophy books and religions. And so, but I think it's more the next generation that really kind of put its foot down and said, and that's where Roddenberry had changed. And then Deep Space Nine, I think, kind of reels that back a little bit more to the, I think, TOS era. And so that's kind of how I've always seen religion with Star Trek in the ways in which it's changed. And then, you know, Voyager, I think, barely wanted to touch the idea. And then, you know, Enterprise doesn't really deal with it as much either, except for when we kind of see the idea of Vulcan religion, really, more so than human. So, do you agree with that at all, or do you still see it differently?
A little bit differently. I think those are good points. And yeah, it is true. Kirk is mainly pointing out people's false gods in the stories that we see. I don't feel like I ever had the impression that Kirk or other human crew members in the original series truly believed in God in the way that we think of in the present day people's approach to religion. And I think the other thing is that when we do see things in Star Trek that might support the idea of a guide or an openness to something like that, they tend to be scientific or technological explanations as opposed to supernatural. But I also think that it's each person's interpretation, even in religion today, of whether God is supernatural or whether God is natural. There's a natural explanation. You know, even for me, when I think about it, I have trouble with the idea of any kind of supernatural explanations, but I don't discount the possibility that there is someone who created us, that there is someone who has a guiding hand in the universe who naturally exists. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around, but I don't discount the possibility that that's true. I think that, like, the motion picture, it's sort of flipped. It's like V'ger is looking for God. V'ger is looking for its creator. So you have a machine who is on that quest, not humans who are on that quest.
Right.
Well, and it's actually the humans who show V'ger that V'ger's wrong. You get that in the original series with Nomad as well.
But I mean, I do think that in some ways, you know, what you do see there is that, you know, V'ger isn't wrong because it does have a god. It was created, right? And in many ways, you know, I think you could look at it as and say that in reality, what the movie is saying is that, okay, so V'ger has a god. He has a creator. There's a good possibility then, and maybe we do too. And the search for him will still continue. Or, you know, the search for that being will continue, right? So, and again, this is where I think when we come back to Deep Space Nine and its dealings with this, it's just so much more, it's so much more nuanced, right? We just are allowing there to be nuance. And the fact that, again, what I think, and I don't mean to sound rude to anybody, so hopefully this doesn't come off rude, but there's a humility in being able to say, maybe there is something that I don't understand. And, you know, isn't that really what it in the best way means to be a good scientist too, right? Like you're saying, I don't understand something, but I think this might be how it happens. And if you're a true scientist, you also have to be open to all possibilities, right? You should be open to the possibility that it could actually be something supernatural, because that has to be in the realm of possibility. So, you know, I think all of that is just a really interesting aspect to this. And I think Deep Space Nine allows for that, whereas especially TNG never allowed for that to be the case.
Right. Yeah.
Deep Space Nine says, oh, you know, actually, we're gonna actually open up the doors for this to be a possibility, because, you know, as Spock would say, there are always possibilities. And if you're a true scientist, one of those possibilities has to be something like the supernatural.
Yeah, well, it raises the question of, well, first, DS9 challenges you to consider your positions, especially on this topic,
which
is one thing that I love about the show. And I think it and what we're discussing right now also raises the question of what do you define as a guide? You know, like you said, V'ger has a guide because V'ger had a creator. So it's in the case of the Bajorans, they see the prophets as gods. They don't necessarily believe they were created by the prophets, but the prophets somehow protect and oversee them, and they have this connection to the prophets, and so they see them that way. And I think the view of what is considered a god is also a question that you have to ask, and it may differ for different people.
Yeah. I mean, man, now I'm just thinking there that song, you know, what is God? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Anyway, sorry.
We'll start doing our head.
Yeah, exactly. Bump, bump. Anyway.
Head bump.
There's a whole other story. It's a whole other thing. Yeah. I apologize for everyone. I think again, the kind of the real beauty in all of this is that it allows us to be able to have this type of nuance to things. And I keep saying that word, but I think that's the best word for this is nuance. And it's just, again, I think it's something that it really is a more honest reality to say that this is a possibility and that these are possibilities. And I think that's the thing that too, you know, and I do love the Admiral being so in the story here, especially in Rapture, of he can't wrap his head around this. But also what's really interesting is he's a lot more ready to give Ben space to figure this out than even some of his own crew, which is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a part of that is that and what this Admiral doesn't really get enough credit for, I think, is that he's actually truly respecting the Bajorans and what they believe and what they believe about Ben, even if he doesn't see it or understand it or understand how this could be a possibility. But he's open to the possibility that maybe there's something here that he doesn't get, which I think is really cool about this episode, and something that, you know, I would not have expected, and, you know, till I saw it, and they, you know, allowed him to kind of have this thought process that is just very different than what you would think they would do with it. I mean, most admirals tend to be jerks, it feels like, anyway. But this one,
well, most of them are plotting some kind of deceptful.
Yes, exactly. But this one is not. This one is not. And I think that's really cool. And I got to give it to them in the writing of here, where you have somebody who's, even though completely out of his element, is supportive of his officer because he trusts his officer, but he also is willing to put aside his own thought process and allow, like, you know, like this is what it truly means to be the Federation. And if you're going to accept a group in that has these type of beliefs, and you got to respect them, right? And he truly is willing to respect the Bajorans and what they believe. I think that's pretty cool.
Right. And very important in an episode that was supposed to end with Bajor finally joining the Federation.
100%.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual prophecy here and then how the story plays out at the end to wrap up our discussion. I did want to do a quick rundown just for reference for everyone. I mentioned up at the top that there are 8 prophecies mentioned on screen. So just quickly to run down those. There's the 8th prophecy in Shadow Play, but they don't actually mention anything about what it says. There's Haran's 7th prophecy in Ferengi Love Songs, which says, or at least it starts, according to Rom, he will come to the palace carrying a chalice, bearing no malice, overflowing with sweet spring wine. So, wow. Matthew, that one sounds more like someone just was wanted to have a drink.
I feel like that's just him trying to get in Lita's pants. So
yeah, I think maybe so. Yeah. Then there's Chabrin's fifth prophecy in The Reckoning, the time of reckoning is at hand. The prophets will weep. Their sorrow will consume the gateway to the temple. And then there's Talnot's prophecy of the final days, until death do us part, which says that the land shall be poisoned by a great evil. And then in Destiny, we get to Trekor's third and fourth prophecies. The emissary will face a fiery trial, and he'll be forced to choose. That's the fourth one. And then the third one, when the river wakes, stirred once more to Jenner's side, three vipers will return to their nest in the sky. And then in Rapture, which we're talking about, Zokal's third prophecy, only someone who had been touched by the prophets could find the ruins of Bahala. And then that leads us to the emissary's prophecies. And Sisko is lying in the infirmary, and suddenly he says, Cardassia. And then they're like, what? He says, I was on Bajor. Bahala had been rebuilt. The people were in the streets celebrating. But then a shadow blocked out the sun. We looked up and saw a cloud filling the sky. It was a swarm of locusts, billions of them. They hovered over the city. The noise was deafening, but just as quickly as they came, they moved on. Now I know where they were going. Cardassia. And then he bursts into the room when they're having the ceremony to welcome Bajor into the Federation, and he yells, locusts! They'll destroy Bajor unless it stands alone. It's too soon. Bajor must not join the Federation. If it does, it will be destroyed. So those two elements there is what we will call the emissary's prophecies. And they influence not only the ending of that story, but really the DS9 story moving forward to the end of the series. What did you think about this prophecy in particular? Mm-hmm. And then how it influenced the story.
I thought this was really bold, because obviously it does give you some idea as to where the story is going, which is an all-out war, and this war's impact on places like Bajor. And it does kind of, especially when you think about it, if you're putting it all into context, it also kind of gives you the opportunity to understand, Deep Space Nine isn't going to be theirs the whole time, because the biggest reason for them to not join the Federation is so that once the Federation pulls out of the Bajoran sector, it isn't razed to the ground, and it is just another occupation again, and not a bloody, destructive war that will take Bajor out forever. And I think that's really interesting, because again, like, if you were a really astute watcher of Deep Space Nine back in the day, you might have been able to start to put together some pieces of where they were going to be going throughout the end of season 5 and into 6, because they are basically giving you a lot of the puzzle pieces, really. And at this point, you just don't know, what those puzzle pieces necessarily mean. But it's very cool that they started to be much more intentional like this with the storytelling, and much more intentional with the mythology that they're creating as well, but not allowing that to then overshadow character development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Robert Hewitt Wolf has said that although they didn't plan out everything in advance that was going to happen in the story, the predictions that are made by Sisko in Rapture were thoroughly planned out. And he said, we pretty much knew what those prophecies were going to be and where they were going to go with the story. And given that this is the 10th episode, Rapture is the 10th episode of season 5, and the imagery here, the locusts swarming over Bajor and then quickly leaving, that does happen just 5 episodes later in By Inferno's Light, when Cardassia joins the Dominion, all of the Dominion ships, the Jem'Hadar ships, come through, and they are coming to the station, and then they change course and they head for Cardassia. And that's when Dukat reveals that he's been having secret negotiations and that Cardassia has agreed to join the Dominion. and that he's going there with these ships. So the lag between this prophecy being revealed to us and seeing some of the events actually happen is quite small, 5 episodes. So no surprise that that part was planned out. I think it was a very interesting move, I felt, especially thinking back to the first time I watched it, because knowing that the entire reason Sisko is there is to help bring Bajor into the Federation, and then to see him burst in and say, no, it can't happen, right at the moment that it was going to happen, was a kind of dramatic storytelling, a turn in the drama of the storytelling that I was happy to see, but wasn't necessarily expecting given the Star Trek that we had had before this.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, when you think of what they did in The Next Generation, this is where the show really makes the turn to say, nope, we're going to be real serialized. Like, we're going to make that turn. We're going to begin to really start to connect ourselves to what we're doing story-wise. And so you're not going to want to miss weeks of this show. And I think, you know, obviously it really changes television in a lot of ways, and it changes Star Trek. It'll take a while for it to really take root in Star Trek, especially since, you know, Voyager's kind of a reaction to Deep Space Nine. But then Enterprise, I mean, picks up that ball and begins to run with it. And then, of course, every show they do now in Star Trek is the most serialized thing you've ever seen in your life. And so, yeah, I mean, this really is a major pivot. And I just think it's a bold thing to do. They plant their flag and say, no, we're going to try to do something that is very different from what you've been getting. And it, you know, they've just been slowly building up themselves to this point. And this is where they're like, nope, this is where it's going to happen. Only thing that's annoying about this episode is that Sisko's comm badge is in the wrong place continuously.
Right. Because this is the first episode where they wore the uniforms that were introduced in First Contact. And so we do have that misplaced comm badge problem. Yeah, I thought it was something for the Star Trek writers to, up to this point, they've been building the story. They've been hinting, yeah, maybe our captain is a god. Maybe he's a spiritual figure to the Bajoran people. But here they say, yeah, definitely he's a god. This is where we're going with the story. And to take a Starfleet captain and to put him in that position, especially when it's not the end, it's not the big reveal like of the series. We're still only in season 5. We're only a third of the way through season 5 at this point. It really set the tone and helped create the Deep Space Nine that we all think of now and that we love so much. So, well, this has been interesting, Matthew, to talk about faith and the prophecies and such. You know, we set out with a very basic outline just to see where the conversation would go. And I think it was, at least for me, it was interesting. I hope the listeners enjoyed it. Is there any final thought you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, I think the thing that I really enjoyed was just rewatching this episode and kind of getting myself back into this mindset. And just, it is really cool to see what they did with this show. And I think just the type of conversations you could have because of it, that's the thing that is beautiful to me. And I continually find myself kind of falling back in love with Deep Space Nine when we get to have conversations like this.
Yeah. Same here. It's amazing how many times you can rewatch the same show and yet still have new and rich conversations, you know, at least new to you as the person having the conversation in the sense that we can raise points that maybe we as an individual didn't think of before. Mm-hmm. So we're continuing to get something rich from this series, which I love so much. All right. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on this theme of spirituality, of faith in Star Trek and Deep Space Nine, your thoughts on the prophecies, anything you'd like to share related to the series, what we talked about today. There are many ways for you to do that. You can find us in the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our closed listeners group. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field and it should come right on up. If you're not yet a member, it is a closed group, so please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. We try to keep that group there for our listeners rather than it being for just a general audience like most Star Trek groups are on Facebook. You can also send us email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. And you can also find us everywhere on social media, Twitter, Instagram. Our username is trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not discussing the finer points of victory with Worf, where can people find you?
Yes, well, you could find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, and so many other social media platforms under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network at our whole other side of the network that's not Star Trek related, but it is related to all of the fandoms that we do love. The 602 Club, that's the place to find it. And got some bonus shows in there as well in that same feed, so you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. You can also find me doing Warp 5 and Literary Treks. Warp 5 is where Chris and I right now are walking through every single episode of Enterprise in celebration of its 20th anniversary, as well as Literary Treks, where we're talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network. I've got a finished show over there called Owlpost with Drea Kaufman. We talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then I'm talking about that other Star franchise, Star Wars, with John Mills on Aggressive Negotiations. Now, Chris, when you're not finding yourself passed out in a holosuite, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me doing crossword puzzles. Now, I brought that up, Matthew, just because you said that other Star franchise. I don't know if you saw New York Times crossword puzzle this past weekend. The clue was the better of two Star franchises.
That's awesome.
But the puzzle was done so you could put Trek or Wars, and it all worked out.
That's hilarious.
That was very clever.
That's a lot of work right there.
Yeah, actually it is, yeah. You can find me elsewhere on the network. You mentioned Warp 5, talking Enterprise with you for the 20th anniversary. I pop in on Literary Trek sometimes. I have a Star Trek Universe podcast called Interphase, and Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room now and then. You can also find me in social media if you'd like to talk about Deep Space Nine or Enterprise or anything about Star Trek or Japan or whatever. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That is my name everywhere in social media, but Twitter is where I'm most active. If you'd like to help us keep the Orb going, we're very thrilled to be back doing new episodes of the Orb, and we really need your help, though, to keep it all going. If you'd like to find out how to get involved and how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. And we really appreciate everyone who's supporting us right now. We would not be able to keep this show or the network going without your help. So thank you so very, very much. Well, Matthew, that really was a fascinating discussion for me today. And I always love talking about these topics with you. And I'm looking forward to our next one.
Chris, I am too, and I hope everybody will join us for that, and we will see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.